Everyone dreams of the perfect corporate culture, right? Of course we do, because we all believe that the corporate culture and its values is what builds our behavior. And because of that, most people think that in order to change a company for the better, you need to change the culture for the better. But that's where mainstream management advice and solid social science completely diverge. So if you think you are helping your company by calling for a new corporate culture and by educating your employees about some core values, please stay tuned for this extremely important episode, because you might be making a very common and a very dangerous mistake. Hello, I'm Mark Poppenborg, and these are the Markup News. Welcome back, or welcome to this show for the first time, if it's your first time. Good to have you here, friends of progressive management ideas, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls. This episode is going to be an important one, because in this episode, I want to cover a topic that is full of misconceptions and logical errors in reasoning. And I've got quite excited about this episode when I started reading an article that is the perfect representation of the very cultural understanding that I think is causing so much harm in businesses. So buckle up. I'm going to try to do my very best to deconstruct this article. And once again, I'm only going to deconstruct one story in this publication today, in this show today. In fact, I might actually get into the habit of doing that in general, because I've had a few people encouraging me to do so. But before I decide on that, I'd like to get a bit more feedback. So you would do me a great favor if you dropped a brief comment below or send me an email and just let me know whether you prefer one story or two stories or five stories, or, you know, I can make these episodes as long as you like, even though I believe it's probably not very helpful if I make them too long. Also, guys, if you haven't shared or recommended any of my videos yet, don't do it. It's not like I'm not asking you to share them. I want to know why you haven't, because if you are following my show but you're not sharing my videos with colleagues, then that might be something that you can't support. You know, there might be some content that you feel hesitant to share with your colleagues within your company, or share online or whatever. And I want to reach as many people as possible, because I really think it's important that we see some of the general mainstream management publications out there for what they are. And a lot of them are outright harmful and go against what we know from solid science. So if I can somehow reach more people, then I want to. And you can help me by helping to understand whether I'm, you know, I still want to be contrarian. I want to be contrarian enough for people to be intrigued by the content, but I also want to stay compatible enough for people to be willing to share and recommend this content. So that's something I could definitely do with some support. With that said, let's talk about culture. And as I already suggested, you know, it's a big one to cover, and it's obviously a topic I can't cover exhaustively. But what I want to do in this episode is I want to lay out one extremely important misconception about culture. And this misconception leads to a lot of harm being caused to businesses and employees. And I really do mean that in the way I'm saying that. It's outright harmful. How do I know that? A, I've caused that harm myself in my early and naive days as a consultant. B, I get a ton of emails and messages, which I'm extremely grateful for, from my predominantly German audience, because I only recently started this show in English, and before that I haven't published any content in English. And these people who are following my work, they basically sigh with relief because they finally understand the BS that is being conducted in so many companies, obviously especially in their own. And C, most importantly, I think, and I know this will sound a little bit over the top confident, maybe, but I know the science, and it's pretty hard to ignore the insights that thorough, solid, sound, social science has provided us with. And this science is unfortunately still pretty niche, but it's important, and it hasn't found its way into the economic reality. Although it is extremely useful, and it hasn't been proven wrong. No one's been able to falsify the system theory that I draw most of my conclusions and ideas from. So I want this to become more popular because I think it can really make a difference, and I've seen it make considerable differences in companies. We don't need to rely on anecdotal evidence, and we don't need to rely or trust the mainstream religion that is still being preached to us in business schools, for example. And it's not all nonsense, but there is a whole new world to be explored. And that whole new world is only very gradually like trickling down into economic reality. So it's about time it got out there. And, you know, in any way I can help with that being the case, and in any way that you could help me help doing that, I would be very, very grateful for. Now, one of these ideas that I think we need to tackle is the way that culture is understood, corporate culture. And that's why I want to dive into the article that basically compelled me to talk about this. And this article was published in Inc. magazine on the 23rd of February, 2021. And it was written by Jim Schlexer. Now, I didn't know Jim Schlexer until then. He heads an organization called Inc. CEO Project. So, you know, that's obviously linked to Inc. magazine. And it advises CEOs. So his message reaches important people, right? And it reaches people who could obviously put an end to some of the corporate misery that we are experiencing. And that's why I felt even more compelled to base this episode around his article. And the article is titled, Why Your Company Needs Values, Not a Rulebook. And what this article does is it builds a line of reasoning that results in promoting this idea of proclaiming a set of values that employees can believe in and can aspire to, and that they should then live by. And that obviously is a very typical proposition. And the first part of the article is completely consistent with what we know about social systems. And the core of what is being said in this beginning, in this early part of the article, is that if a company is confronted with recurring problems, so problems that aren't new and that have been dealt with before, you can write standard operating procedures to cover those cases. And the article illustrates this by using McDonald's as an example. And the guy says, Jim says, a great example is McDonald's. If you run a McDonald's franchise, there are hundreds of standard operating procedures that help you make decisions based on all the different scenarios you're likely to encounter. And it's thanks to those standard operating procedures that when you go into a McDonald's, whether that's in San Francisco or Beijing or Amsterdam, your experience and the food you eat will be remarkably similar. Agreed. So I think we can confidently assert when we are dealing with recurring problems, use standard operating procedures because they're helpful. And standard operating procedures are typically made of rules or task sheets or, you know, operating handbooks or manuals, you name it. They all work as long as you are dealing with recurring problems. Now, the reason why this works is because you don't need your employees' creativity. Because if a problem is recurring by nature, you already know the solution. So why would you need creativity? So all you need to do is to ensure that your employees are working by the book. And that's why it makes sense, total sense, to apply standard operating procedures if problems are recurring. Now, what do you do in the case of a new problem? Or, we have to include this, problems that are of a nature that doesn't allow you to apply standard operating procedures. Like, for example, making a hiring decision, which, you know, is for many businesses, for most businesses, is a recurring problem. But there is no objective criteria by which a choice, you know, a hiring choice could be algorithmically calculated. There's no standard operating procedure that can make the right decision. And of course, you know, like the conventional management evangelists and the dashboard fanatics, they will try to claim the opposite. They will try to make you believe that the you know, that everything is measurable and everything can be reduced to causal logic and can be put on the dashboard. But you can falsify that very easily. For example, just try to follow a script next time you try to convince someone. Like, for example, if you want to try to convince someone to go to your favorite restaurant, or if you want to convince someone to marry you or whatever, you know, if you apply a script, I can assure you, you will find out firsthand what complexity actually means, because scripts don't work when you are dealing with problems that are complex and that don't follow if this, then that logic. So back to the article. When standard operating procedures fail because problems are new or they are complex, then what do people do? Well, they use their thoughts, right? And they use their emotions. And how are their thoughts and emotions fed? They are strongly fed by the company's culture. Because of course I act differently when I'm exposed to a startup culture, you know, full of room for error and typically a tendency to improvise, to take risks, to help each other out and all these things, as opposed to working within like a bureaucratic monster in which errors, you know, they can literally be fatal to your career, and helping other people, other colleagues, could harm your ability to meet your productivity targets. So you behave differently depending on the context. And because of that, there's a proclivity to trying to change the culture because you think that's how you change people's behavior. And before you get to that conclusion, the article is perfectly consistent with everything I believe in. You know, we have laid out the fact that there's recurring problems and there's new or complex problems. And these two problems have to be dealt with in two different ways. You can apply standard operating procedures for recurring problems, and you need to apply something differently for new or complex problems. Now, the point where mainstream management advice goes wrong is where it falls for this illusion of doability and this illusion for causal thinking, applying it to culture. And what is being argued is the following. So they say when people, you know, when they don't follow standard operating procedures, in a world where they would make sense, what we can do is we can hold them accountable for that, and we can sanction them. And as a consequence, in, you know, anticipating that I might be sanctioned will make me act up based upon the standard operating procedures in 9 out of 10 cases. So I will typically comply. So if we now, in the presence of a new or a complex problem where standard operating procedures fail, if we now witness behavior that is unfavorable, why don't we just, instead of using standard operating procedures, we assume that this behavior is a consequence of the culture, and because of that, and this is where the mainstream management advice goes wrong, all we need to do is change the culture. And this is basically what Jim Schlexer says in his article. He says, when people begin to live the values of the business daily, it becomes the culture. That's why values are often aspirational. They paint a picture of how you want the company to act and operate. Because building and living a set of values everyone can believe in and aspire to will be a big part of the success of your business moving into the future. But this very claim, that is obviously not exclusive to this article, quite the opposite, it's the mainstream management assumption. This assumption is totally flawed. And this assumption is so deeply ingrained in our management literature about culture and change management and all these related topics. Even in our society, I think it's deeply ingrained. And it's hard to see this assumption for what it is. And the assumption is that culture is shapeable, changeable, that you can proclaim a culture and then expect people to live by it. But that's just, that is complete and utter nonsense. And you can test this very easily. You can test that it's nonsense very easily for yourself. All you need to do is to gather, take a group of friends that you know well, and that you share a joint history of friendship together. Sit down, identify some values that you would prefer to observe whenever you meet as a group. Say you know certain elements of your friendship that aren't favorable and you would like to change them for the better. Let everyone declare their honest and unconditional support for this agreement towards these new core values. And I assure you, you will see change in behavior, but you will certainly not see the exact outcome of what you were calling for. If culture was something we could decide on, then friendships wouldn't fall apart. Marriages wouldn't break apart, break up. No one wants a marriage to fail, right? Like we sit at the registry office and we all want to be married for a lifetime, at least in 999 out of 100 cases, 1,000 cases, I'm sure that's the case. So if a marriage is in some kind of disbalance, and the assertion of this article was true, all you would need to do is to sit down and agree on your core value, which is love. It's pretty simple. And then you just have to live by it. Because no one wants the opposite, right? It's dead simple. But it doesn't work, and we all know it. Because culture is an emergent property. That's the counterintuitive part. It's not something we actively or deterministically create. Culture is a bit like it's a social system's memory. But, and this is what many management gurus fail to understand, they often agree on the fact that you could call it a memory. You know, you often hear stuff like, culture is how we do things around here. I think that's a famous quote, isn't it? Anyway, just because it's a memory, because it's a social system's memory, that doesn't mean that we are the authors of this memory. And that's the common misconception. You can think of it as a board game. It's a bit like, say you play chess. You know, you and me, we could be playing chess. And of course, I am making my moves and you are making your moves. But the outcome of the game is not made by either of us. You know, if it was, we wouldn't have to play. It's a combination. The outcome of this game is a combination of the properties of the game, the way chess is manufactured, if you like, of our moves, and a lot of different other small factors that lead to a chess match unfolding, and it unfolds in a different way every time. Like there is no, well, there's probably a few matches that have played out in exactly the same way, but it's very rare. And that's just a chess game. I mean, chess is a complex game and it's a difficult one to play. But think of marriage. You know, we all know that it's a lot more complex than a game. I don't know by which factor, but it's definitely more complex. And that's because there's more options to choose from. The chess game is quite limited. And let's move from a marriage to a company, to a bigger social system that involves 50 or 100 or 500 or 10,000 employees. And the logical mistake that is being made in this article, and again, of course, not only in this article, it's made all the time, it's made everywhere, is that if we just all gave our very best, then surely things should get better, right? But why this is a logical mistake, why this is flawed, is because we think intuitively and understandably that we are the ones attributing meaning to something objectively. So we think that if the core value, for instance, is integrity, that's the value that we are calling for, then by acting in a way that we would deem an act of integrity, we ourselves would say, well, this is, you know, this is an act of integrity. This will then result in integrity being perceived. That's our assumption. But this assumption is another assumption that is easily falsified. You can easily prove that wrong. You can act in the exact same way in two different companies or in two different families or in two different countries or whatever, whatever comparison you can come up with, and your exact same behavior will be translated into meaning, but not by you, but by the social system that this behavior is addressed or directed at. So if I go into a, as you know, I was born and raised in Germany, and I spent most of my time in Germany. In Germany, you go into saunas naked. So going into the sauna naked is a behavior. And in a German sauna, I would say that's an adequate behavior. Now, I can apply that very same behavior in a different country. In fact, I have done accidentally in America. It was one of my first trips outside of Germany where there was an opportunity to go to a sauna. And I just walked in naked and it didn't end well. But the action was exactly the same one, right? But the system interpreted my action in a different way. So if you proclaim new core values, which this article suggests, that very proclamation is already loaded up with meaning by the social system. So if the social system could speak, it might say something like, watch out, here's another foolish attempt to manufacture something that you can't manufacture. So that's the meaning that's being put to the action of calling out for values. So that already is an emergent phenomena. And as a consequence, people will feel influenced by it. So it's not the proclaimed core values that act as a reference for behavior, but rather it's the proclamation and the way it's delivered and the company's history that it connects to and all these other things, all these factors that are way too complex to determine. All of this will serve as a new reference for behavior, but certainly not for the one you hoped for. In fact, more often than not, what you hope for doesn't get achieved and you actually cause harm by calling for new core values. So it's not only is it a pointless attempt to proclaim values, it's often outright harmful for the business. Because think about it. If you work for a company and you have a sense for the company's culture, which everyone does, you know, you probably can't put your company's culture into words, but you are perfectly capable to navigate within your company's culture. Everyone is able to do that. Like we are perfectly capable to navigate within our society's environment and our country's culture. And now your boss in this particular company announces new corporate values. And of course, they sound aspirational because, you know, they're so incredibly trivial that no one would disagree. Like no one in their right mind would disagree with wanting more integrity or honesty or trust or cooperation or whatever. You know, it's always the same. They're so trivial that everyone can obviously agree to them. But now in the next meeting, you are sat next to your colleague and your colleague says, hey, Mark, you know, I know I've been a bit, I've not been greatly forthcoming recently. And I know that I could share some more information with you and that would be helpful for you. So I just wanted to show you this. And then he kind of, you know, I don't know, shows me a report that he's drawn up. Now, just a week ago, that very same person was someone that I thought, was dishonest. And now he's trying to act on behalf of these new values. But is he? Is he really? Or is he just pretending that he is? So, the problem is with proclaiming values that aren't a reflection of what the company's values actually are, this all opens doors to misinterpretation, and it opens the door to doubts about people's integrity. Because how do I know that this person is acting on behalf of their, you know, their true emotions, or if they're just putting on a behavior probably in best intentions? You know, it's not like they're trying to cause harm, but how do I know that they're not just putting on that behavior to satisfy the expectations that come along with the core values having been proclaimed? So very often calling for integrity or any other favorable value will result in the exact opposite, because it causes more uncertainty about people's behavior. It's a bit like when you've had an argument with your partner, and then you did them a favor afterwards. Then they might say, "Oh, you just did that because of our argument, so your act isn't genuine." I've had that before. I've had arguments with my wife, nothing that was too serious. Well, some of them might have been. I've done her some kind of favor afterwards, and I've heard her say, "Well, you don't actually mean that, do you?" So social systems, like companies, like families, like, you know, all these are social systems. They are so complex. They are living organisms, and comparing them to a machine that you can change by pure willpower, which this article implicitly does, is just as naive as it is to assume that you could determine the outcome of a chess game or a football match, or an animal, for example, with its inner biochemical operations. These systems aren't open to our deterministic wishes. And this article demonstrates one of these deeply flawed conventional management assumptions. And it's frustrating because it leads to money being burned for cultural change projects, and it's money gets burned on expensive consultants. And it's saddest of all, actually, I think, it's frustrating because it causes a lot of cynicism within the workforce. So what can you do? If you don't like your culture, think about it this way. Every company gets the culture it deserves, because culture is a company's memory, and it's not the memory we need to change itself or try to change. It's the framework. We need to build frameworks in which people can get work done. And if they can get work done and that leads to success, then your culture will mirror that. That doesn't mean that, you know, it's always going to feel cozy and joyful if you are successful. But from my experience and from what social science teaches us, if a company is successful, typically that will lead to people describing their company's culture as positive. And equally, if a company is unsuccessful, they will do the opposite. They will say the culture is negative. So the culture is just the culture, you know, like a shadow. If you're a cripple and your shadow is a reflection of you, then your shadow will look like a cripple. Fix your posture, do some exercises, eat healthy, do whatever it takes to stand upright, and then your shadow will follow. It will mirror that. But just, you know, don't worry about the culture itself. Don't worry about the shadow. If you try to, it's a bit like trying to, when you try to change culture, it's a bit like trying to stop water from flowing through your hands. You can't, you know, it's nothing we can control. But what we can control is a company's structure and a company's management practices. And I think basically blaming the culture is a way to subtly put the blame on everyone other than the management, when actually you haven't set the framework in which good, effective, and efficient work can be done, right? So this whole notion of cultural change it's a bit like escaping the responsibility for making some tough decisions, for taking it into your own hands, for eliminating some of the bureaucracy. And those with formal power, they can't order culture, but what they can do is they can change rules. Literally, they can change the rules of the chess game, and that will result in a change of behavior, obviously. And that will then again be mirrored in the company's culture. But again, it won't be mirrored in a way that we can anticipate. We're just going to have to watch it and see what happens. So if you really want to make a difference, unfortunately, I believe you will have to give up on that popular paradigm that culture is an object at our disposal. It's not. But if you give up on that paradigm, that opens a whole new world of potential change that is, you know, far more effective, because you can then change the framework in which work is being done. Now, I'm sure you're gonna hear me talk about this many more times in the show, because there's so much confusion about this out there. And even guys like Simon Sinek get this wrong. And, you know, I will happily challenge him on those aspects of his content, although I think I can agree with most of what he says. But there's a lot of change needed in our perception of culture. And the companies that get this right, that understand this, and that don't fiddle around with people's values and try to manipulate them into behaving differently, but address the environment in which they actually act, I've seen this time and time again, they can make a real difference. So let's wrap this up one up for today. And I'll be back with more. And I hope I can dig a bit deeper into this whole topic of culture in different episodes. I'll see you next week, hopefully. And we're always going live on Wednesdays at 7:30 p.m. Greenwich Mean Time, which is 8:30 p.m. Central European Time. Every time that time on Wednesdays, a new episode of the show will go live, and you will find it here on this channel. You will find it as an audio version on Spotify, on Apple Podcast, pretty much everywhere. And I would love to have you back. I would love to have a debate about this topic in the comments section. So let me know what you think. Don't forget to like and subscribe if you liked this, and if you want to see more. And please, you know, if you've got any articles that you would like me to deconstruct, send them to me in an email, or post them, even better, post them in the YouTube comment section or in whatever section you are listening to this episode. And I will carefully have a look at this article, and if I think it's useful for our audience, then I will deconstruct it. Thanks, guys. I will see you soon.